You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. It is Tuesday night. Joining me is John Tatey from the AV Club. John, we missed you.
Hey, here I am. I miss you, too.
It's been on me. I've been, it's one of those things where I've been having trouble with my calendar. Like, this last 2 months, starting with the Cubs going into the World Series and then the election, I feel like I just kind of, I've lost focus. And I'm hoping
yes,
that
I know that feeling.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. So I apologize that you've fallen through the. It's on me. That's why you haven't been
don't
here.
I apologize, Patty. I'm happy to be here.
I have to. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Hey, can I complain about something on the driving? Sometimes I think of ideas for stuff to talk about while I'm driving down here. And tonight it happens to be driving.
Actually driving.
I see that. I'm wondering if somebody can explain this. As you know, I lived in New York for 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw this phenomenon. I can't recall any time where I saw this phenomenon that I see on a regular basis here in Chicago, which people driving around without their lights on and in the middle of the night.
I know.
Do you see this ever?
Maybe they're scattered. Maybe since the World Series and the election, they've been a little. Have you noticed it more in the last 2 months?
Right.
No, you know what's strange about that? Something stupid happened when I was younger, which was this urban myth that if you flash your lights. Do you know this urban myth?
I know this myth. I think of it every time I see someone without their lights on. Tell it.
Yes. Which is that it's a way for gang members to initiate new gang members. If someone flashes their lights, they drive around. See, now I'm afraid that if I tell this urban myth, other people will be afraid to flash their lights at other people as well.
Let's just stipulate that it is false, because it's not true.
Right.
It's.
But I feel like saying it in some ways, someone will sort of venture out to make it true. Do you know what I'm saying?
But like, it's a pretty common myth. I think we're in the clear. We're not making the world a worse place by sharing this urban myth, which is totally false and wrong.
I don't want to make the world. Now I have the pressure of making the world a worse place by sharing this myth. Esmeralda, are you familiar with this urban myth?
I am.
Jasmine, are you familiar with this urban myth?
I am not.
Okay.
Oh,
See, I feel like I don't want to deter Jasmine from ever serving publicly to let someone know, to alert them that their lights aren't on.
See, but the problem with that urban myth is, wouldn't they get hurt too?
What, the
offender? Well, now we have to tell people.
Hold on. I know we're dancing around a lot this.
The offender?
The offender, right. Jasmine,
so
when you.
It seems a little.
I know. It is sort of this conundrum that's eating itself right now because I don't want to share the myth. Jasmine, when you see someone driving around without their headlights on, what do you do?
I like flag them down, like
you,
hey.
You wave at them.
Yeah, like hey.
Okay,
and
so
then, like I honk too.
And you honk, but
yeah.
you don't flash your lights at them.
No, because I don't know. It's just weird. I don't know.
Okay, interesting. She doesn't have a reason why she doesn't do it.
Yeah, I'm surprised at that.
My reason is that when I was younger, I was told this myth was going around that gang members would, as initiation, would drive around with their headlights off, and when someone flashed their lights at them, they would follow that person, and it was a gang member's job to kill that person.
Murder them. Yeah.
This is really the awful. Welcome to the show, John Tate.
I know. It's my
you
fault.
You didn't bring it up. I did. You did. Oh, what was your myth?
I thought they would run into them.
No.
Oh, no, that's a much gentler version.
Oh, so never mind.
I heard shooting always. Yeah.
You always heard shooting as well.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You grew up on the East Coast, so completely independent of each other
and
growing
nationwide.
Up. Yeah. So now I feel horrible that I've shared that story, that myth, that has impacted me, though, because now I don't flash my lights at anybody.
Well, but I do, and I've never had anyone turn their lights on as a result.
That's a good point, too. They don't know why you're doing it. They just think you're being annoying.
I'm sorry. You know what I think it is that a lot of cars now just have automatic lights.
Yes, that too.
So maybe people just don't even think about it anymore.
Why didn't I see it on the East Coast then? Well, it seems to be at least a Chicago thing in my experience.
We're just a little laid back. We're like driving my lights on, driving my lights off.
I mean,
we just don't care.
The city is quite brightly lit, and you know that's nice.
Yes.
But so is Manhattan.
I know. How about when you see someone driving with one light on? Do you feel like you have to let them know that they have a light out?
Well, the reason I bring this up is because I saw someone come up behind me on Lakeshore, and
mm-hmm.
they did not have their black car, no lights on, and then they pass me, and their taillights are on. So both of their headlamps were
out,
and they're driving around.
So you realize
there's no way you don't notice that.
I don't know. I mean, you would think, but
yeah.
Some people are completely a little unaware
yeah.
that the street in front of them has not been, you know, significantly or appropriately lit from their headlamps.
Yeah, I mean, it is hard to tell because, like I said, the streets aren't very brightly lit. So I guess I can understand it. But
no, I understand your pet peeve. I think that
turn your lights on.
Turn your lights on. Right now, check your lights. Are your lights on if you are driving? Obviously, if you're at home, don't go outside and check your car. No need. You're fine. Stay where you are.
You should go check to see if your lights are on.
If you could stand in front of your home and check and see cars driving by, if they happen to have their lights on, that would work out very well. I think just, you know, random cars, the traffic, make sure everything's okay.
Yeah. Neighborhood watch for headlights. That's what you're proposing.
That seems a little aggressive.
Cars going up and down Michigan, we can see.
Yeah, look, here's a random sample of Chicago drivers, and they all have their lights on.
That Cadillac SUV had its daytime running lights on. Those were not the headlights.
Oh,
I think that's what Esmeralda's talking
about. They were driving casual?
Yeah.
I was like, I'm too cool to turn my headlamps on.
Yeah.
Oh, you mean the automatic lights?
They have the ones, you know, I think most cars now have the daytime running lights, or many of them do. And that's, you can see that. The little ones, the little chiclets. Maybe people rely on them.
Can I also say one of my pet peeves in the vein of the lights, the headlights, are the really white LED, super bright.
That hit you.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
Tone that stuff down. Hey, car makers. Why don't you take it down a notch? I'm going to take it down a notch right now after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the AV Club's John Tatey. And we've been away from each other for a while. Football season is in full swing. It had just started, getting kind of taking off. How has the season been? How's your block and tackle segment been?
I've been traveling a lot lately, so the column has been a little choppy, but I'm back in the saddle, and I love doing it. And I really like to, if people aren't familiar with it, Block and Tackle is a weekly, publishes on Friday, because every other day is taken by other huge weekly football columns that people write.
Right.
Not on AV Club, but around the web. And I sort of look at it as a pop cultural product, and as a media product, and sort of take apart the production of it, and the announcers, and the referees, and just sort of look at it as a TV show.
Yes.
As well as a sport. And I have a lot of fun doing it. Thank you for bringing it up. And I wrote after the election, actually, about how doing the column has made me appreciate all the other teams, and how...
Because you are, in fact, a Patriots fan.
I'm a Patriots fan, and I don't, you know, I cop to that in the column. And when I started writing it, and this is what I talked about in my first post-election column, because the night of the election, a couple people tweeted me, and one person said, like, I've been telling people tonight, you know, not to brag, but this person said, I've been telling people tonight what good work you do and how there's heart to it. And I realized, oh, my God, people are going to expect me to say something about this debacle in my football column this week. So I talked about how when I started writing the column, I wasn't sure how I'd be able to be as excited about all the other teams, having been a Patriots fan, having grown up in New England. And I talked about how it was easy once I just started learning about them, and like they became people instead of figures wearing different uniforms.
Right.
You know, they became human beings. And I love the players. I do love the game. I don't really love the league, the NFL as an organization, but I love...
What are some of the elements of the organization? Because I'm not that familiar. I hear rumblings and some griping here and there, but I don't know what are some of the top issues that bug you, irritate you.
I mean...
What is it, John? What gets under your skin when it comes to the NFL?
I don't think we have enough time for it, but it's just sort of an authoritarian league that I think doesn't treat its players with the respect and regard that they deserve. It's a lot of selfish billionaires, and the commissioner is a dunderhead, let's say. That's the most polite word I can come up with.
A dunderhead. You don't hear that come up that often. I like it.
I think it's run in a needlessly disrespectful way as far as the players are concerned. And
especially
for
a sport that chews up and spits out its players.
That's
so
right.
Routinely.
These players should be vaunted, and they should be treated with just the utmost care because it is such a brutal, ugly sport. As you say, it chews people up. And also the league's attitude toward social issues where they could make such a good difference and where a league like, say, the NBA is progressive and very socially conscious, the NFL just sort of pays lip service to things like domestic violence or racial issues and whatnot. It really is a very superficial treatment.
And especially this year being kind of a very much in the center of discussion about what it means to be an American, you know, to be patriotic, to whether you respect the flag or you respect people's rights. It's sort of been an interesting year.
I will say, to the league's credit, they allowed that debate. And look, it's a league where there are a lot of displays of patriotism and of and many tributes to the military, all of which is, you know, good and fine, I think. Although it does get a little over the top sometimes, but it's also a league that will allow some of its players to kneel for the anthem, which is, as you well know, was inflamed a lot of people. And yet
a lot of people. There were protests here when the 49ers were in town.
Sure. And yet the league allowed it. I was kind of surprised, actually, that the league didn't crack down on it. But I'll give them credit for that.
On that one.
But my point with the post-election column was that all I had to do to get excited about these other teams and to be able to see where the other fans were coming from was to learn about them. And I said, this is where sports can be valuable. There's really no stakes. The stakes are all pretend. They're all made up. It's just what we invest in the sports. Right?
I agree.
They're not actually affecting people's lives, right?
Right. Because hasn't there been sort of a diminishing of numbers of viewership?
There has, yeah,
right.
But it's still hugely pro football is still hugely popular,
right,
even if the numbers are declining.
But to your point about what you were saying.
Yeah, to me, the sports is an arena where we can practice, looking at it from the other guy's point of view. And I have to say, getting to love these other teams, I think, has gotten me better at seeing the other point of view with more important stuff that matters. And in my column, I encourage people, hey, root for a different team this weekend. See what it feels like.
What?
Like, practice that skill of taking on a different viewpoint in an arena where it doesn't matter.
Well, it's easy for Chicagoans to root for other teams this year. I have to be honest
That's
with
true.
You. You know what?
Maybe
I will take your assignment.
On a curve.
Yeah, I will take that assignment and pick another team this weekend. Thank you for that. It kind of takes the pressure off because it's been a little bit painful. Three wins in, and I think, I'm going to go ahead. Will you assign me a team that I should cheer for this weekend?
Oh, sure. You know,
please.
I...
And for our listeners, will you assign them a team? I think as WGN listeners, as our friends and family right now, tell us who we should root for.
There's a bunch of... You know, unfortunately, the Chargers are out of it. They've been a very entertaining team to watch this year. I would say the Colts or the Raiders, and I say that not out of any particular allegiance to them, especially as a Patriots fan. I'm not, excited for the Colts to do great, but they have been so much fun to watch this year. I think that the Colts and the Raiders have played the most fun games as far as just as a viewer. I'm kind of in love. You can see I'm getting choked up.
Oh, we got choked up about the football teams, Ez. He really did.
No, I didn't. I'm kind of in love with this year's Colts, and they're not great, and their coach may very well be on the way out, but Andrew Luck, their quarterback, just cannot be kept down, and they've played so many games where it looked like through the first three quarters they were just a disaster, and then they light up with this fire in the fourth quarter and have an amazing finish. So many Colts games this year have built to an amazing finish. They usually deliver on entertainment value. So
okay.
I say Raiders, a similar team, have been very entertaining to watch. I say either of those teams will be fun to watch this
all
weekend.
All right. Everybody, all of our friends and family in WGN, we want everyone to watch either the Raiders. I think I'm going to go with the Colts. I think the assignment for
that's
everyone.
That's good. I think that's a good choice.
The Colts, because they're a little bit of a, kind of a sister city. We kind of get each other. We're in the Midwest. We have, they're a little bit warmer because they're a little bit south of us, but I'm going to go with Indy.
Yeah,
they are.
Still gets awful cold there.
It does. But you know what? 5 to 10 degrees makes a big difference.
Yeah. I remember one Thanksgiving I spent there because my sister-in-law used to live there, and I associate Indianapolis with this freezing cold bedroom I had to sleep in that Thanksgiving. So it's funny to hear you say it's warmer because I always associate it with this just like bone-chilling cold.
You can't turn the heat on the entire city of Indianapolis because the people you stayed with refused to heat the room you were staying in.
I'm here backing the Colts, and if my family heard me doing that, they would be beside themselves.
That's rough. So. Did you have in that cold room? Did you have one of those like Afghan blankets that had a lot of holes in it, so you couldn't even get warm?
Yes, exactly.
Why does every house have that blanket? And guests always have to, like, there's no way to get warm. Have you ever tried to use an Afghan blanket, Rob Martier, Esmeralda? Have you ever tried to use one of those like knit blankets? It's all got all the holes in it. It's all you
no
have.
Good.
It's no good. No.
Gotta get yourself a Mexican blanket. Seriously.
It's a big, like the big velour blankets. Have you ever tried one of those, Rob? One of those big Afghan ones?
Yeah, you know, but it's like, are those the ones that get all staticky?
I don't know.
You know what? Those are the, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of the
Mexican
the
blankets.
The fleece one. No. The Mexican blankets are fine. I'm thinking of the fleece ones. I love Mexican blankets.
Yes.
I'm thinking of those fleece ones because once you get weather like we're in right now and it's dry, you know, you get all the staticky and
Rob gives off a lot of electricity when he tries to go to bed at night.
Those Afghan blankets usually are multicolored.
Yeah, they're like a patchwork of knit circles, and then there's holes in between, and your fingers get caught, and then your toe. Yeah, no,
I think they look a little tacky.
Those are for show, unfortunately, and not for utility. They're not helpful in a cold situation like a poor John Tatey.
Bad lap blankets, you know, if you're sitting on the couch, but that's it. It is not a bed.
Well, because you're fully clothed.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's just another added layer.
Yes, exactly.
Pajamas are the promise of warm blankets. That's all that is. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the AV Club's John Tatey. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays to you. I love the music tonight.
I know. It's a little...
I'm feeling a little 80-ish tonight.
Yeah,
so.
Great choices, Jasmine.
Thank you.
For someone who doesn't remember the 80s.
I was born in 89, so I am technically an 89 baby. I am an 80s baby.
She's an 80s baby.
I am.
That's fair. That's very, very fair. It was a lot of synthesizer.
December 1989.
Do you watch a lot of movies from the 80s, Jasmine? Like what was going on the year I was born? I just stumbled across the original Karate Kid, and I didn't realize it was from 1984.
Is that Ralph Macchio?
Yeah, Ralph Macchio and Pat Morita. Is that going to be another pizza place telling you that they're not coming?
I hope not.
We have
food concerns we've had in this studio.
I'm guessing our guests are here for midnight. We have the cast of Chagrin Falls, which wrapped about a week and a half ago. We do wrap parties once in a while, you know, so the cast can get together and celebrate a little bit of the run that they had of their production and tell stories that other performers and even the writer or director might not have even realized.
Ooh, backstage scandal. Is that what we're going to get?
Sometimes the scandal or like we've talked to the folks at the Gift Theater about some of the moments that they had when they were doing Grapes of Wrath. Mm-hmm. And like just things like whether it was in the audience or, you know, moments that they had on stage that nobody like because you're in your head when you're on stage. And you're not in your head so much as you're in the moment and
you're highly focused.
Yeah. And little things can go this way or that you never really share with anybody else because it's happening so intensely and in front of an audience. And so we share moments about what happened during a production. It's a lot of fun.
And this is the Chagrin Falls.
Chagrin Falls. Yeah. It's a great story. And I'm so sad because I my intention is always to see the play so that I can also have a conversation about what I saw. But like I told you, I fell off the map this last 2 months from the World Series through the election and now into the holidays. Like it's kind of a quickening.
Me too.
I can't get a hold on any one thing.
Hey, when I texted you last week, That was the first time I had realized I hadn't been on the radio in a couple of months. Like, it just, like, it hadn't even occurred to me that we hadn't been doing the radio.
Well, because we would start booking the show, and you know, because in the first weeks after the, well, first of all, we were covering the Cubs, and then the election happened, and then the next couple weeks were still kind of the fallout from the election, and then like Carm, I haven't had Carm on the show recently either. So you're not the only one that I've sort of fallen off of my routine.
Well, let me say they have spruced up the Showcase studio. A little bit since I was in here. Got a nice new background over here.
Yeah, the wrap. That's the wall wrap.
Skyline wrap over here. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
It's very orange, isn't it?
The clock is backlit. Nice touch. It was not like that before, I don't believe. And maybe you folks know this. If you watch, can they watch it on the web right now? Can they?
Yes, they can. They can go to WGNradio.com.
Maybe you know this, but if you're watching, but we have new cameras now. There used to be just one camera for the whole studio. Now there's a camera for Patty, and Patty looks like she looks like she's in a modern newsroom, and she's well lit. And then the shot of me it looks like I'm in my basement where I keep my VHS tapes of the local news that I've
You're not?
I know. It's the magic of radio.
It's the worst picture of me, and Patty looks like the consummate
part of it is the lighting. I wonder if there's some way I can fix the lighting for you. I don't want to do anything that would mess things up because this is where Steve Cochran sits, so I would hate to change the lighting for him. Maybe in helping you, help Andrea Darlis.
Do you see how my one light here is different?
Yeah, well, I think, too.
That's true.
They're in the morning, so the sun is coming up.
Oh, right.
So maybe they don't use the light as much?
That's true. So do you think if I move the lights around a little bit, will that mess them up? Because I really do.
Oh, that I don't know.
Because there is a... Why is that one a white light? Anyway, if you go to WGNradio.com, you can see
You
exactly
can see how horrible
about.
I look.
You don't look horrible. I mean, I don't know what you look like on that screen.
We should bring you separate lights to light you.
Oh, yeah. Maybe some lighting from underneath here. Should I... Like, maybe if I turn my flashlights
little
on
stand
you.
Lights.
Fill light. That's is what it, we need.
Yeah. Right. Like a screen. We put a screen behind you, right? So that it also can... And you make your own scenery.
For the radio.
One of those umbrellas.
Making all this happen. Yeah.
Yes. I like that. I like all of that. It's all part of the magic.
So during the break, Patty had to cancel a pizza that they said they couldn't deliver.
They asked me to come pick it up.
Yeah, they asked her to come. She told them that she was on the radio.
Yeah, thank you, Jet's Pizza. I don't mind telling people. So Jet's Pizza is part of.
And I always get Jet's Pizza. I'm kind of embarrassed that I recommended it now because they.
I've heard great things about it. Well,
didn't we have a whole conversation
about Jet's?
Yeah,
that was Nate Weatherup loves Jet's Pizza.
Right.
Yes. And I still have not had it. So I saw it come up in my Grubhub. Apparently, I'm still not going to have it. Yeah. But I saw it come up in the Grubhub. I use that as a delivery device. I forgot to ask our wonderful sponsors, like Lou Malnati's, to send over a pizza. So I'm like, you know what? I will splurge for this pizza for my guests that are coming up. And yes, so I put in an order through Grubhub, and they called and said, yeah, we're not delivering anymore. And that's kind of the point of putting in an order through Grubhub.
Yeah, exactly. And then Patty called Grubhub to make sure it was canceled, and they said, you'll get a refund in 3 to 5 business days.
Yeah,
what do they need a week for?
That's disconcerting too, isn't it? Because they've already processed it. Why would you process my charge and then hold on to it for 3 to 5 days? What are you doing with my money, Grubhub?
I used to work in retail, and when someone canceled a sale or had a return, you slid the credit card in and punched in the number to give them back.
Yeah.
I don't know why that takes a week.
This is why I have to pay very close attention.
So many things take 3 to 5 business days, that it seems like. Like when I cancel an email subscription, like, can I get a ton of email?
Right.
Because, you
take
know,
me off this list.
Exactly. PR right. companies get my name and I cancel, and I often get this thing that says, you know, allow 2 to 4 weeks processing. You know,
why?
It's like it's electronic. Yeah. Just flip the switch.
Yeah, you've got it right now. You see in front of you that I no longer want this. Why don't you make it happen now?
Let the computer handle it instantly.
Here, I want to see if this.
Okay, now we're adjusting the lighting.
Yeah. Is that better? Do you feel like if we underlight you, if we do a light from underneath?
Do you have a plastic cup?
Actually a little better.
A plastic cup?
A clear plastic cup. I saw it online that it'll soften the glow of the light from a phone.
So if I get a cup to put it over.
Yeah, it'll make it lantern-esque.
Ooh, now it looks like you're underwater with a water bottle.
He's a mermaid.
Oh, yeah. Mermaid.
It looks like I'm at the aquarium.
Mm-hmm. I like that look as well. Do all of that.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll work on that.
I've been finding that dealing with the policies of different, when you mentioned trying to cancel subscription to an email list, or I was just trying to cancel this order, but also trying to figure out the ins and outs of, let me be very specific. I was trying to figure out how to maintain my status as a frequent flyer with United Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
And because if you want to have silver, you have to have flown a certain number of miles.
Yes.
So I thought I had done the math where I was going to hit that number when I did my last trip.
Yeah, it's like calculus.
Oh, and then I called them and I'm like, how many miles am I short? They said, you're 5,000 miles short. There's no way I can make that up. And I said, how do I maintain my status? $575 they want for me to maintain my status.
For 5,000 miles?
Yes.
That's
isn't that crazy?
Scene.
Yeah, that was, I don't know what to do. But also, it's gut-wrenching to me to not be able to maintain
my status.
Yeah.
It's all those trains down to Springfield. Those aren't doing you any good.
No, they're not doing you any good.
But is there a time limit?
I have until December 31st.
Have to fly a certain amount
mm-hmm.
during
per
the
year.
Year.
Yeah.
Yep. You have to fly
silly.
A certain number
qualifying
of
miles.
Segments, money, mm-hmm. and miles.
Combination
we should be
of that.
Happy you're flying at all.
Exactly, because I take a lot of Amtrak.
You're right.
I saw this article that you can go across the country on Amtrak for $213.
Wow, I went to California in 2009.
How did you like
but
it?
Still, it was fun. It was like a three-day trip. It was lovely. I went through from here to about Colorado, it just looks gross. Sorry, but it's a sad wasteland. But then you hit Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, it's gorgeous.
So you're saying it's a little bit like the first few minutes of The Wizard of Oz.
Yeah.
And then you're right because you're in not on Kansas, but I'm saying
it's
the black and white part of the movie where it's kind of like all everything's dull and drab, and then you pass over into Colorado.
I thought I was stuck in Joliet for a day.
You were what?
I thought I was stuck in Joliet for a day.
That was what it looked like on the train.
And
line.
Then it just mountains, and it was gorgeous and snow, and
Boy, Joliet and Kansas are taking a lot of stick in this segment.
We're very sorry, Joliet. Well, she's from Joliet.
I'm from there, so I can talk some.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not. I did not. Everyone in Joliet, that was one of your own.
Nobody else endorsed that.
Mm-mm. I mean, kind of. I could kind of see that. I mean, it's Joliet.
There's really.
I don't know. I've never
great.
Been to Joliet.
Yeah, well, don't. You don't need to.
I'll take you there. The train goes right through Joliet. Amtrak stops on the way to Springfield.
Many listeners in Joliet.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And they would probably
do.
Be like, no, it's not that great.
They're like, it's where I live.
Esmeralda, I'm giving you a shovel and you just keep digging down. You're
supposed
to
dig out. Oh, no, I'm in that hole like, hey, I'm very far down.
Well, as long as you don't take us down to the hole with you. I'm teasing.
I'm waving at you from up here.
You have to be very careful when you slam a community.
Well, I'm from there, so I can.
That's why I'm trying to be careful.
My family's still there.
Yes. It's kind of like when you can make fun of your own family, but if someone outside the family makes fun of you, then all bets are off.
That's right.
Yeah. And then fisticuffs happen.
I was making fun of a town one night, I think like a year or 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. Do you remember this?
I don't. Which
it was.
Don't tell us the town that you made fun of.
I don't remember the town, so it doesn't matter.
Don't get in the hole with as.
They had some clock tower, some half-assed clock tower.
Okay, Rockford's going to be calling us any minute now. They know exactly what you're talking about. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. What is it?
It's Rockford.
Okay.
Has the clock tower.
And I was making fun of the clock tower, and I
got grief?
There was a certain point at which Patty said, hey, take it easy.
Hey, take it easy on Rockford.
Yeah.
Yeah. Our friend, Representative John Cabello, who says that people who, after the election, who were afraid were being ridiculous. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, really?
He said he wasn't hearing from anyone that was afraid. So I gave out the number to his office so that people could, chime in a little bit.
Did they?
Yeah, some people did. But Rockford's a fun town. I like Rockford.
I have been to Rockford since that segment, not realizing it was the town that I made fun of. And it was, it's a beautiful place.
My very first night on the air, there was an entire part of the city that got very angry at me. So I learned to tread carefully.
Your first night?
My first night on the air. So I didn't realize. So now I'm learning as I go. I make mistakes.
How did that feel, though?
That people were mad at me?
Well, on your first night, it must have been kind of terrifying.
What I've learned as a comic is it doesn't matter what you say because people are going to hear what they want, right? It doesn't matter what you think or what your intention is. That what people hear can be completely different than what you wanted them to accept. And so I was like, okay, lesson learned.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah. So I don't even know if it's so much. But the other thing is, I also need to, if you're in a position where you're saying things, you also can't be guarded all the time either. And have to have thick enough skin to deal with when people get their feathers ruffled. when they're all being snowflakes. That's such a weird thing that people call each other snowflakes to me. I don't know what, because someone said, can we stop with the name calling? Because I was using it, I thought I was using it somewhat ironically or sarcastically, and I was using it in reference to being called a snowflake. So I use the word snowflake, and someone's like, stop with the name calling. It's like, I'm not.
Is that a name call? I mean, I understand it's kind of a mocking thing. Not quite name calling. I don't think. Yeah. It's not that mean. A snowflake is so pretty.
I don't know. Suck it up, Buttercup. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you for joining us pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the AV Club's John Tatey, who will be joining us on Sunday for our holiday extravaganza.
I can't wait.
Our Christmas, what do we call it? Christmas pageant? Parade?
Yeah. We mm-hmm. went back and forth between pageant and parade. We couldn't decide what it should be.
It's good to go with a P word, because the pretty late Christmas parade pageant, I think pageant is...
Pretty late pageant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The pretty late pageant.
You know, I want some peppermint bark. That live read made me hungry for candy.
I do love peppermint bark. We have a great tray of cake and treats from Eataly, by the way. And thank you so much to our friends at Eataly. This is kind of a, I know that you tried it and it's something you haven't had before, but Esmeralda, do you have like some of the sweet bread that you get from like Mexican bakeries and stuff at Christmas time?
Like the shells?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I get those every day of the year.
I'm just saying. Because this reminds me a little bit of that sort of sweet, but it's almost like bread.
You were saying during the break, it reminded you of your childhood.
It does remind me of my childhood. It has that taste. So this is these are Italian holiday cakes that are made especially for this time of year at Eataly, and they are carrying this at Eataly. And it's customary for Italians to bring a panettone and Pandora and a bottle of wine to their host for holiday parties. So if you're looking for a new little tradition to introduce, maybe something special to bring for the holidays, this is one of your options. They have a lovely tray and also different gift options for the Italian pastries.
A panettone and a Pandora. Do you know what the difference is? Do you know which is
Pandoro. Which? Pandoro. I'll have to find out.
Pandoro.
Pandoro.
Pantone, I've seen the box for it at the store. It's huge.
Yeah.
It's like a big old cake and bread thing.
Yeah. And they also sent us a bottle of Grande Cuvée, which is a sparkling wine. And looking forward to trying that with the Pandoro.
Sparkling wine for the wrap party. How perfect is that?
I know. And I'll have some other cocktails, depending on what they're interested in. And maybe not at all, you know?
Hey, can I get back to the candy live read for a second?
Yes, of course.
You can call in to reserve your candy?
Yes.
Oh.
Because that's the thing is, you don't realize some places, especially like Anderson's, it's in demand. So there are things that run out.
Wow.
Like, because everything is made fresh.
What a service. So I could call them right now or in the morning, I guess, when they open.
Or go to the AndersonsCandy.com.
Go to the AndersonsCandy.com. I'm going to reserve some peppermint bark. Because I'm being honest here, I'm not paid to plug this place. But you were reading the live read and I
peppermint
thought,
bark.
I'm trying to figure out what to get for my wife for Christmas, because she did the I don't want any gifts thing. Don't you hate that?
I know.
I don't want any gifts, she says, because of what the state the country is in, I just want you to give a donation in my name or something, which of course
which
I will,
nice.
But
mm-hmm.
you got to put something under the tree, and now I'm thinking candy.
Peppermint bark.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. AndersonsCandyShop.com. I love peppermint bark. They have the little sprinkles of the candy cane on top.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. I will say this. I think that people, if someone asks you, what can I get you for Christmas? I think perhaps we need to stop saying, don't get me anything. I think I'm going to have to ask people to, just think of something, just give them something specific. They're asking you for advice. They're asking for your help.
Yes. I hate don't get me anything. Say candy. That's a great answer. I'm
candy.
Gonna remember that
yeah.
Now.
Candy. A scarf, because then that gives you an opportunity.
Scarf.
Gives
Good.
You an opportunity to buy something that has your perspective, like, on your take on what they might appreciate as an accessory.
A scarf is an excellent answer.
See,
yes, you can always use another scarf.
Why mm-hmm. get a present?
What do you mean, why get a present?
I'm the one that goes, no, don't get me anything.
I know. I'm not saying
I don't like it. Because then you feel obligated to get them a present. And you're like, oh, come
We're
on.
Gonna, I'm going to do some therapy with Ez during the break. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And when a theater company runs goes through a run with their production, at the end they have they typically have a cast party. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to invite performers on the air to have their wrap party with us and share stories, because even when you were, you know, hanging out after the show, you're only maybe talking to one or two other people. Here we can kind of sit around and share stories, and then you can also share those stories with listeners who don't really know what goes on behind the scenes, whether it's rehearsals or the performances. Joining us in studio is the cast of Chagrin Falls. They closed a little bit over a week and a half ago. Usually you want to do a wrap party like when everything is still fresh, but I was out of town, so my apologies to not be here when we had promised on the 12th. Joining me in studio is Summer Austin, and we actually started talking a few years ago. Well, you were kind enough to come take one of my classes.
Oh my gosh, that
doing
was so
stand-up.
Much fun.
That was very sweet. It was weird because I mostly am like, I love comedy, and I'm glad you do too.
It was a great class.
Thank you very much. Tell us a little bit about the theater company and this production.
Yeah, so we just went into our fifth year of production this year. We started in 2010. We actually formed the company in 2010. And then we've been mostly doing world premiere plays. We have a company full of playwrights, and so we tend to do a lot of company-generated work.
And this is the agency, correct?
That's right. This is the agency, Theater Collective, and we do occasionally we do plays written by other people, and so my friend who was on the show earlier, Mia McCullough, she wrote this play a while ago, but she and I met in a stand-up comedy class of all places.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were. I mean, there were other theater people there, but we were like really theater people, you know, like we did it for a living all the time. There were a couple few other people in the class who did that, and just trying stand-up comedy. And so we had the comedy connection. We've done all kinds of projects with comedy, but never a theater production before. So we decided that we were going to take the plunge and produce one of her plays. And she has so many amazing plays, but this is a really, really great one too.
And this was the, it was called Chagrin Falls.
Yes, it's called Chagrin Falls. It opened in 2001 with Stage Left Theater Company. Mm-hmm. And it hasn't been done in Chicago since. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. So this is the 15-year anniversary, which is really exciting.
And the role that you played?
I was the director.
Oh, that's right.
So
you were the director.
That was my role.
That is an important role right there.
It sure was.
So introduce us a little bit to the cast,
okay,
if you would.
Well, yeah. So we lost a few people because, you know, it's been...
They heard the pizza wasn't coming.
That's right.
So
they
heard we weren't having jets. It was...
all those other losers that had other things to do tonight. They're
losers.
Not here, but you have the cool ones.
We still
fine.
Have pizza coming. It's just not from China.
Yeah, mm-hmm. If you're listening, losers, we're having a good time here in the studio.
Yeah, Thaddeus.
We have Rob Kuhn, who is playing Riley McDougal.
Mm-hmm. And you were, and your job, so the Chagrin Falls is about this town where the primary source of income for the townspeople, for
it's,
the citizens.
It's one of two main industries, either the local prison, mm-hmm. or the local slaughterhouse.
And your character is retiring.
Just retired from the slaughterhouse.
Right.
So it's 30 years of making beef.
Making beef. So I'm sorry, the character's name again was?
Riley McDougal.
Riley, is it MacDougal or
MacDougal.
So he's Scottish, not Irish.
Yes.
And is that a
yes.
point
well,
of attention?
Well, you can tell it in the accent. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I immediately
thought
that.
Different. Yeah. Accent's different, Scotland and Ireland.
Yeah.
It's fine.
It's completely different. It's noticeable, too. And who else do we have?
Then we have Merrick.
Merrick.
Who is playing Henry.
Hi.
Hi, Merrick. You have to come close to your microphone.
Hi.
So we can hear your wonderful voice. Hello. And you were playing?
Henry.
And what was Henry's job in this town of Chagrin Falls?
Henry was actually worked at the other... place of employment, which
at the
was
prison.
The prison, yes.
Oh, and what were his thoughts on being a prison guard? Was he a guard or
prison
a different...
guard? Yeah, mm-hmm. Essentially. I mean, during the course of the play, he's watching a prisoner who's about to be put into the essentially the slaughterhouse for people.
Well, not exactly. He's just
yeah,
going to be
right.
the initial
a little
part
different.
Of the process
right.
of
that's
the slaughterhouse.
How Henry's parents explained it to him.
Yeah,
the
that's
ongoing
how Henry
process of the slaughterhouse he's exempt from.
Right.
Yeah, and you know the week of the actual execution, there's they have suicide watch to make sure the prisoners don't take their own life, and that's what Henry is doing during the week of the play.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So that is Merrick, who played Henry. And who else do we have?
John Paul. I played Jonas.
And what was Jonas's role in this town?
Jonas's role is huge.
Huge.
It's brief. It's very brief.
There's no small roles.
No.
Right?
No, I mean, it really is huge. He's sort of this object of disgust and revulsion, and he's the reason basically everyone's there.
Which is at the bar. Everyone's hanging out at the bar.
Well, no, I mean, everyone's at the town.
Wait a minute.
People are coming to town.
The one who's going to be executed.
I'm being executed.
Oh.
But he survived somehow.
I did. Henry did a really good job of watching me every night. I didn't slit my wrists, which would have taken away all the fun for the prison guards who wanted to kill me. It was really, really a powerful role, and it really is a powerful story, and he plays just a huge integral part in telling that story.
And are there people in town to protest his execution, that kind of thing?
There are. They're mentioned. They're not actually seen.
Sure.
There is a screenplay version that Mia has written, and I believe there are more characters in that version. So, but yes, because the action takes place in the bar of Irene's motel, there's only so much that you can actually show.
Right.
And then there are some scenes that are taking place in the prison. And also, John Paul also understudied Thaddeus. Mm.
And so. Let me just point out that the bigger of the two of us are here tonight. and Cody, if you're listening,
that stature or
just
leave it there.
Okay.
Just leave it right
He knows
there.
What I'm talking about. Yeah. And if he wants to find me, he knows where he can do that.
That's fine. Yeah. This sounds like fighting
I'm
words.
Kidding.
See,
this
is why
Cody.
We do rap parties.
No.
We find out all
love
these.
You too, Cody.
No, I did. I understudied Thaddeus, which is also just a huge character. And Cody did an amazing job of...
He was okay. He's not here to defend himself.
of bringing that character...
See, this will teach people not to show up for the rap party.
Yeah, exactly. But no, he did an excellent job of bringing that character to life every night. But I did have the opportunity to play that character once, and it was outstanding.
Oh,
outstanding. And I also want another shout out to someone who isn't here. Mia... The play's amazing. Words are amazing, and that was such a joy to do that.
And that's why I'm really disappointed that I missed the production, because even the idea of when she was talking about the genesis for writing Chagrin Falls, she's really a fascinating woman and writer, so I'm really glad to hear that you guys had this wonderful production. Diana?
Yep.
And hello. Welcome to the show. Welcome pretty late. Mm-hmm. What character did you play?
I understudy Patrice.
Patrice. And what was Patrice's role in this?
So I'm an outsider who shows up and stirs the pot for everybody.
Oh, look out.
Mm-hmm. She riles. I don't need to. I have my own agenda.
Oh, fair enough.
But yeah, I cause problems.
Oh, wow. Well, there you go. And Patrice. Mm-hmm. And who do we have?
And I'm Andrew.
Uh-huh.
I'm the artistic director of the company. So my job is to make sure that everybody's checks don't bounce.
And how did that go, everybody? Everyone doing all right?
Yeah.
I don't know yet. I'll let you know.
Yet to be
seen. Told us not to cash them for
yet
a while.
To be seen.
He did say...
Really? He told me I could cash mine right away.
Oh, look out. Is it post-dated? And that's why you're having pizza tonight. He has bad news for you. More after this on 720
exactly
WGN.
Right.
You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. You know, when you go live, anything can happen. There's a lot of variables involved. I have the luxury of being in my little studio. Got all the buttons. We have a little bit of control over what's going on, who comes on the air. But when you're in front of a live audience, anything can happen. And I'm curious, we were talking to the cast and crew of Chagrin Falls. How long was the run, Summer? 6 weeks?
7 weeks.
7 weeks.
7 weeks. There you go. Mm-hmm. So kind of a long run.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, the cast, was there any night in particular that sticks out for you? A couple instances where just the weirdest thing happened or just things that pop out for you, either from being on stage or from the audience?
Well, we did have a prop in the show that that Rob handled each night.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was...
I love how very vague you are leading in. A prop.
It was a prop.
A prop.
We have many props in the show. What are you talking about? This is the prop-heaviest show I've ever...
Yeah, it was very heavy. this was actually a heavy prop. It was a large piece of meat.
Oh.
Like directly from a cow.
It was the delivery to the diner.
Side of beef.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you guys use real meat, is what I'm guessing.
Oh, no.
Oh, okay.
We had a brilliant props designer.
That would smell
Alec
after 7
Long.
Weeks.
It would. I was going to say, you'd have like a fresh slab of cow every night would be weird.
Yeah, Alec did great with the props and everything. This particular prop, we wanted to leak a little bit. You know,
dripping.
Like,
you wanted some blood, right?
Want some
authenticity.
Some meat water, yeah.
Some meat water.
And he's only on stage with it for, 15 seconds, if that?
Not even, probably about 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just crosses the stage and comes back on. But getting that prop to leak in the right way.
Mm-hmm. At the right time.
At the right time. Mm-hmm. Didn't happen until probably about 3 shows toward the end.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was.
And that's actually the truth, because we had a hair dryer upstairs in the dressing room, and I would have to go up after the scene and hit with a hair dryer because I was just going to get soaked.
I have to ask the obvious question: why did you want it to leak?
There's a reference in the script to it leaking all over the floor, so somebody has to mop the floor again.
So you want it to really?
So it's got to leak,
right? Yeah. This is not a sketch show. You're not pantomiming everything. So you want
kind of like it was for a while. It was leaking, kind of like the Titanic was leaking.
more of a gush, really, than a leak.
Yeah.
And when it leaked, when you had the gush, was there any reaction from the audience of
the
ick factor?
We got some ew.
Yeah, I would imagine. What was in the meat water?
It was water.
It was water. Little food coloring. But that's all it needs because the mind.
Was just like, there's just like, oh my gosh, what has he killed? A camel?
Right. A side of beef is a pretty
hefty.
He's
got the whole hump right there.
Yeah.
He's got the whole thing.
And Patty, this was a realistic show, so you know, everything had to be very real.
And what other elements were extremely real? We have meat water that we have so far.
We had a lot of fake whiskey.
Okay. Yes. Oh, that's so sad. I know. I think that people think, I know that for the most part it's tea, but sometimes they've got to actually have some booze. Was there ever?
No.
He drank
so much,
he would have been.
That's because I would have been briefly entertaining and then incoherent and then dead.
That's never good.
My character drank literally in every single scene. He drank something. Is either beer or coffee or water or immense quantities of fake bourbon. Mm-hmm. One of my biggest challenges in the play was actually getting through the play, not having to dash to the bathroom. Yes.
Well, when you're working with props and you know, you have these actions, like the business, they call it having to do some small business. Do you try to find something new every night, or do you find yourself going, you know, why am I taking this, you know?
Well, you try to find something new every night.
Right.
And you try to, one of the things that you're finding every night is just trying to do it in the moment that you're there, and not trying to reproduce what you've done before.
Right.
But just, I'm going to be, you know, this is as if I were sitting in a bar, and I did have to go and research sitting in a bar. And
yeah, no, that takes a lot of work. I would imagine you want to get in.
Well,
it is.
But it's that professionalism in me that made me do that. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think that's one of the cool things about being an actor. Actually, is that the whole thrust of it is, what do you want to get from the other characters that you're playing, the other actors that you're playing with, right? And in life, oftentimes you don't have a lot of opportunity to do it over. You know, you want to tell your boss off, and then you leave the room, and then you go, I knew exactly what to say,
but I
didn't say it. I wish I could have said it. So, like, doing it over and over again, it was always the intention was the same, right?
Sure.
I know what I need to get from you, but maybe I'll try it a little differently tonight.
Interesting.
And it would open up so many doors, you know, that you never thought could exist. And my character was really interesting because interacting with Patrice, because Patrice actually gets an opportunity to interview the man who she sentences to death.
Oh.
Basically.
Wait, she sentences him to death
She was on the jury
that
sentenced him to death. And in Oklahoma, the jury decides the sentence.
Interesting.
And that really messed her up, as you can imagine. So she comes to talk to Jonas. And that was, like, really juicy for me as an actor, to not give her what she wanted and to get everything that I wanted out of her. So, you know, to do that every night and to do it in a different way was really exciting. And I think a lot of the play was designed in such a way that actors could do that and the audience could get a fresh experience every night, even if they saw it a couple times.
And it's really interesting the way that John Paul had to do this, because Mia has written that scene that this character only appears in shadow.
Actually,
oh, really?
It doesn't appear.
Yeah,
all.
It's just you know, you hear him. You hear him. Mm-hmm.
Which then, is actually the best way to experience John Paul, mm-hmm. if you want.
It's never actually be seen on stage?
No, I'm behind a scrim.
Okay.
Every night, and it's just this ominous sort of shadow, and I'm piped through the PA, which adds a whole other element of just like disaster and doom and gloom, you know, which is
and great. Removal and lack yeah. of contact.
Yeah.
Right. Because it would have been, you know, if Patrice actually was face to face with you, it would have been behind a glass, you know,
right.
with a phone.
In a prison, right.
Exactly. And like, but in the play.
The visitation room, I guess,
exactly.
is that mm-hmm. at the prison.
So it's stylized in the play. So they don't have phones in their hands. Right? So how do you make that happen on stage and give that same sort of feel, right? But without having to have two people.
Another location, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot of problem solving when it comes to interpreting a script
sure
and bringing
was.
It to life.
Yeah. It sure was. So we decided to have this character of Jonas, who's never seen in the script, he's never seen. He's just piped in through a loudspeaker, I think, is mm-hmm. the stage direction. So in this one, which it was so great because we had Mia in the room for a lot of rehearsals. She was in the room for casting.
The director and writer. I mean, mm-hmm. the writer and...
Yeah.
Yes.
It was great, too. I mean, for me, it was so interesting to have the playwright there, too, right? And how do you negotiate that, you know? But I was like, hey, what do you think about seeing Jonas a little bit? And she's like, absolutely not. I'm like, what if we see him in shadow, right? So we decided to try this. This wasn't
That's
something that was done
very
before.
Smart. Yeah.
It was cool. It was really cool. So we had him behind a scrim and had him, you know, so you could actually, we could see, you know, we could see you a little bit and you could definitely see out.
Yeah,
the
I mean, I thought that was like really beneficial for the audience. It was great for me because it gave me something to work with, you know, but it did create that detachment, like Rob said, mm-hmm. which I think the whole, that is one of the big themes of the play is that we're so detached from the process of these things. Mass food production. People don't interact with their food.
Or think where it comes from.
Right.
Or, right.
And very few people are burdened with that responsibility.
It comes from the jewel.
Oh, right. Absolutely. Of course it comes from the jewel. Yeah. And I'm lucky if I see where it came before that. Mm-hmm. Now that it's on yeah. the label. And Diana, when you were in part of the production, as an understudy, is that kind of weird when you tell people you're like, I was the understudy? But that's an important place to be, right?
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, this was my first show that I've ever done. So
congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. That's great.
Awesome.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. So I walked into it not really knowing what I was doing. So I kind of had the luxury of ignorance.
I wish I had the luxury of ignorance myself.
Although some people would contend something that you're always working to find.
And
yes,
because you know if you have questions, then you can make discoveries.
Right.
If you know things, you can't make discoveries right. anymore. And as you go through rehearsal, you want to have that luxury of ignorance and come in thinking about what you don't know.
Right.
Also, I have to say,
you have lights go on.
Yeah.
So I was going to say the understudies are like. I mean, they're so important.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's like the hardest job. And I've been an understudy. I'm sure you have, Rob, like many of us have. It's the most difficult job, you know, and have a good understudy is like, and they also had their own performance. So they, you know, they were definitely going to be definitely going on. Right.
Right.
But, you know, it's like it's the most thankless job, the hardest job. You have to be able to put together a whole performance with minimal rehearsals. It's really tough. And for your first show, oh, my gosh, unbelievable.
When was your first show, Diana?
It was the understudy performance. That was the first stage thing I've ever really done.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What brought you
to this world?
What brought you to auditions for Chagrin Falls? Have you been auditioning for productions?
Kind of here and there, but nothing I really dedicated myself to. I decided it was time for that career change and to start pursuing stuff that kind of fulfilled the soul a bit more
okay.
than the pocketbook.
And what's been filling your pocketbook?
I'm a pharmacist.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to laugh like that.
I know. Really good job.
180. No. I have
we
have a very good friend of the show, regular on the show, Dr. Charles Turk, who is a pharmacist. He's our pharmacist expert, and so I might invite you back for other segments.
Alrighty yeah. then.
Oh, that's
my
great.
Number.
And where are you practicing your pharmacy?
I've stepped away for now, so I could try to focus on this.
That's great.
I haven't been trying hard enough, really. So I decided to really
give
myself an excuse.
Well, because if you have the comfort of doing one thing that you know will pay the bills and take care of it, and it's still there.
Exactly.
You have your training, you have your certification.
Yep, I kept my license.
Exactly. So, good for you. Had you gone to study theater before?
So I took a few classes like 4 years ago, just the basics of acting.
Wow. She really does have the luxury of ignorance. I mean, as far as like
fantastic.
Of being involved. No, but I mean, like, she hasn't gone through all the theater programs and had like the politics of it and the infighting and all that. I mean, you guys know.
I mean, I know a lot of musicians in particular who went to music school and then put down the instrument and never played it again.
Exactly.
Because it corrupted them. But yeah, I mean, playing alongside Diana.
There's a pureness to them.
There really was. There was this. Total
I didn't tell
openness.
Any of them before the show.
Oh, my God.
They didn't know that I hadn't done anything before.
It was great. You did a great job.
I love this story. Not that all of your stories aren't fantastic, I'm sure.
It's just one of those things where I didn't want to put in anybody's head, like, that's the newbie. You got to watch out for her.
Right.
So I'm just like, I'll do my thing. We'll see how it goes. And then afterwards,
Hey, not for nothing. I don't know what I'm doing out here. So, no, that's really spectacular because clearly you did. I mean, that's kind of the art of acting is occupying a space and bringing something that people don't expect. Mm-hmm. Andrew, have you seen someone audition before that had no, like, little experience?
Oh, I've seen all sorts of people audition that have no experience.
But then to pull it off.
No, I mean, I have the, speaking of luxury, I have the luxury of, I teach acting along the summer, and so I work with a lot of people that are new to acting, and there is something that's really wonderful I teach at Triton College as well, and
okay.
at DePaul, and I just finished a show out at Triton, and there's something about working with people that are new to it I think those of us that have done a lot of shows sort of, we get used to going into those rooms and going into those spaces and going, this is just, you know, a thing.
Right.
But there really is it's a powerful space to step into as a human being, I think. And I think people that are new to it, you know, they haven't had that sort of repetition enough that it loses the magic. So, I mean, unfortunately, I was not there for the understudy performance, but talking to Summer after that performance, she was so elated by everybody's work, specifically Diana, and just talking about how much love there was in the space after that show, and I think that I think it's a powerful reminder of the, you know, what we do. It's
right.
a really mm-hmm. cool thing that we do.
Absolutely. And, you know, we get back to saying that this is the core of it, is having that sort of beginner's mind. I'm a playwright, basically, and that's how I know Mia,
mm-hmm.
As we were in a writing group together. And when you bring a script into rehearsal as a playwright, you are so far ahead of everybody with the things that you know
right.
about mm-hmm. the characters, about the play, about their journey. And the real challenge for you at that moment is to put that aside.
Right.
And let the discoveries happen instead of giving them information that you have. We all have to go back to zero to allow all this other creative energy to start to blossom there, because all you can do at that point is limit it.
Exactly.
If you're bringing in all the stuff you know, all you can do is limit everybody else's creative energy. But
right,
come back to zero.
Yes, if you have like a checklist of, have I done this,
exactly.
have I done that, have I done this? It's like if you don't know what that checklist is,
mm-hmm.
you kind of are creating it as
you
go.
Yeah, you're putting them into your box.
Exactly.
If you come in with a checklist that you have to check everything off. And actually, some of the best thing you can do as a writer is to allow actors to struggle. Because then all of that creative energy that they have, all of that knowledge that they have, all that brain power that they have, and there's more of them than there are of you as a playwright, that comes to bear on the play, and the play starts to grow to become bigger than what you envisioned.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's what you have when you go up, something bigger than you thought it was going to be, well, then you feel like you're a success. But it all comes back to starting from the mind of being somebody who doesn't know.
Merrick, do you find that, like, in the process when you're coming to a role, do you have a checklist, or do you have the sort of things that you've been taught, or just the things that you like to rely on?
Well, getting to know a character for me is very organic, and finding where they are in life. I think elements like people who don't have as much acting experience coming in can breathe new life into any kind of production. I think working with Mia was a wonderful thing in this play. She did a great job of giving us information that we needed and working with Summer and kind of guiding us in that way, but also stepping back in a few moments and just saying, I don't need to be a part of whatever you're discovering here. And that, I've never worked directly with a wonderful playwright like that and had the opportunity to share this work that she created. It was really an incredible thing.
We're talking to the cast and the director and the artistic director of Chagrin Falls with the Agency Theater Production. They have more productions coming up in 2017. More with our friends when we come back on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is the cast and the director and artistic director of Chagrin Falls for their rap party, their on-air rap party. Just laying it all out there for everybody. Did you have a rap party for this production?
We had a cast party. I knew that the holidays can be hard to get people to, you know, once you pass a certain date. So we did have one. The second to last performance, we had a cast party in the theater space at Irene's bar.
Yeah, the play takes place in a bar.
On the set. And how big, Merrick? How big is the audience? How many seats are in there?
40 max.
So it's kind of an intimate production.
Yeah, very intimate. The different audience reactions are always fun to listen to because there are a lot of comedic elements in the show, but sometimes the audience picks up on something that you never realized was funny before and maybe shouldn't be that funny.
Do you have an example?
It's one thing where the audience will laugh at very tense, very upsetting moments. They've had a scene in the play where a character basically has a breakdown. And there are places where people would just like laugh in the middle of it.
Do you think was it like a nervous laugh or?
It's, you know, that's one of the reasons that we laugh. We laugh to find community, not necessarily because something is funny.
Or a pressure release as well.
Right, a pressure release.
Yeah, and Mia certainly put those moments in there intentionally.
Oh, just Lord, yes.
Give people a chance to step out of the mire that was the emotion in those moments. And yeah.
And so being behind the scrim for you, John Paul, what was that? Have you done a role before where you're not seen on stage? Where you're on stage but not on stage, that scene?
I can't say I have. And
because it's a different skill set to act and not be seen, right?
Oh. So it's really, yeah. It's,
we're very grateful, to John Paul, for doing that role.
Oh, that's nice.
Because you train physically, and obviously you do vocal training, but
yeah, I mean it was really challenging. To tell you the truth, it was really challenging to find that connection with Patrice without being able to look her in the eyes, because that's so important to making those connections, you know. But I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And to tell you the truth, like, that's one of the parts of the play that's like one of the most makes you want to take a shower after you've heard it or watched it. And there are moments in that where people giggled or laughed.
And you were playing an inmate who's on death row.
On death row.
Waiting execution.
Day before his execution.
Waiting for his execution. Probably hasn't taken any visitors and finally takes one. And she happens to be one of the girls who put him in there. Mm-hmm. And can I tell everyone why he's... He's in prison for...
Yeah,
raping and killing an 8-year-old girl.
Oh, wow.
And
I can see why the audience would be
right. And Patrice
mortified.
Is really young and looks particularly young. So this is just like heaven on earth for him. This is his last hurrah. And he says some really nasty things. And I remember and it's stifled laughter, but it's so uncomfortable. I think that, you know, people find those wherever
people,
they
people
can get
reach
it.
Out to each other. Through laughter, just I'm okay, right?
Right, right.
We're okay. We're all here together. This is not real,
right? Yeah,
and that prompts a lot of laughter.
And I think theater is at its most powerful when it creates those community moments. Like we walked into this space and we were individuals, but now we're experiencing this thing together, and we're a community now.
You're all in it together.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And Diana, being this, as this was your first performance, and this sounds like it was a kind of a tough role too.
It's heavy.
Yeah,
it's a very heavy show. And but again, the luxury of ignorance. I'm like, this sounds like an interesting story.
Experience, right? And so, what was that? What was that night like for you? Your first time stepping
amazing.
Into the role.
Just the whole rehearsal process, everything from start to finish, has been amazing. And by all accounts, I'm being spoiled by working with this theater company.
We should give a shout out to our assistant directors too. Mm-hmm. So the
Alex and Cordy were amazing. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting because I had been watching the show throughout the run and going through the rehearsals, and then because John Paul is my Thaddeus. It's weird to see. Well, because
I love how you said that, Cody. Yeah. Cody, did you hear that?
Well, because, you know, I've been watching him behind the scrim. It's like, okay, he's the creepy guy, but now...
He's the creepy guy.
But then he's now stepped out from behind the curtain and is somebody completely mm-hmm. different.
Right.
So it was weird to watch it and then be in it and then go mm-hmm. back to watching it again. Like, oh, this is not the same.
Production were really, really diligent, too, coming to rehearsal all the time. They were very present in the room all the time while we were working, and that was really important.
Well, and I would imagine that's crucial to making sure that you are with the energy of the cast and
absolutely.
Being keyed into everything. Well, again, we are. Can you guys stay for one more segment?
Sure.
I want to find out more about you guys. We are talking to the cast, the director, and the artistic director of Chagrin Falls with the Agency Theater Production Company. Is it a production company?
Theater Collective.
The Agency Theater Collective. And we'll talk more about our guests when we come back. It's time for a break and then the news after this on 720 WGN.
Every day.
Get Chicago news first at the top of every hour.
The Chicago Conversation.
I'm Steve Bertrand in the WGN Newsroom.
News, traffic, weather, sports.
Now WGN Sports.
Never miss a story. On Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Joining me is the cast, the director, and the artistic director of the recent production of Chagrin Falls by the Agency Theater Collective. And I want to start with Summer and ask you a little bit about where you're from and what got you into theater.
Ooh, okay. I'm from Des Moines, Iowa, originally. I went to the University of Iowa, and that's what got me started in theater.
Did you apply to, you know, did you have theater experience in high school?
I did. I was one of those kids in high school that... I was a mime troupe reject. So
I'm sorry, what?
In Des Moines, Iowa.
Is this for real?
This is a stand-up set. She's got a stand-up set on the mime troupe.
I do,
so here
but
we go.
It's true. I was a junior high school mime, and then I auditioned for and thusly got rejected for the high school mime troupe.
But it's mime.
It's still my.
You were junior varsity mime, and
a junior high school mime, and then I auditioned for them in high school, and I didn't get in. And it still is the one heartbreak of my
adult life. Summer's burying
the
lead here, though, because it's not just a mime troupe. It's a mime troupe that does public service announcement mime.
It's like very earnest, you know, very, very, like, imagine high school, you know. Social action. It's not exactly social action mime, but
is it like PSAs where it's like all stop, drop, and roll?
Like,
I mean, that's a good mime.
It's like mime sketches about the dangers of drunk driving.
Yeah, okay. Today it would be like about texting and driving. You know, like really earnest, like very, you know. And I got rejected from it, so I became the kid who there was like always a sign card for each new skit.
Like a title sign.
Okay. Yeah, and I was the one that stood behind in the wings of the stage and moved the card over.
Essentially, you became the kid that the mime kids mocked.
Yes.
That is a special place in history.
That's my history.
And she made it her life's work.
Now I'm a director.
I don't know. Esmeralda, but, this is a first on the show. We've never had an aspiring mime performer.
Yes. And
mime doesn't generally do well on radio.
But do you know that now I have an adult high school mime troupe in Chicago, and it's your revenge, the sweetest revenge is success. We do. We've done many performances, and my one day is to mime off the Baker's Dozen. That's the name of the troupe.
Also, it's named the Baker's Dozen, I have to say.
There's 13 of them. See what they did there?
See what you did there?
Yeah.
See what you did there.
So that was my background. And then I went to University of Iowa, and so I didn't have a lot of experience. And I did this thing called No Shame.
Except for holding
theater.
That sign. Yes.
Except for holding the sign. So I was mainly backstage. And I started doing this show called No Shame Theater at University of Iowa. And we started up a No Shame Theater here in Chicago. We've been running for 5 years now. So the idea of No Shame is like it was all the people who didn't get cast. Not just the people who didn't get cast in shows, but because I didn't get cast very much, I found my – my friends in No Shame Theater, and the rules were, it was a theatrical open mic where the only rules are that you have to do a, you can only do a piece that's original, no longer than 5 minutes, and you can't break any rules or break any laws, and those are the only rules.
Oh,
so that's it. You can't break any laws, and you can't break yourself, and you can't break the theater space. And so I started doing this kind of like very, you know, scrappy theater performance at University of Iowa, and that's what kind of saved my life, actually, and got me involved in theater, and now here I am.
And here you are, directing, and have your own theater. Now, how many theater companies do you have, then?
Well, just one.
I was going to say.
But we have a school. We have an acting school, so it's almost like another, yeah, it's a lot of work. So.
Andrew, is it a lot of work?
Oh, it's a lot of work, for sure, yeah. 100%. I think like, Friday will be some of my like first day off in about 9 months, something like that.
Mm-hmm. It's good to be
a lot
busy.
Of work. Yeah, we're real busy, that's for sure.
And where are you from, Andrew?
I grew up in Marshfield, Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
Which its only claim to fame is that it's the home of the world's second largest round barn.
Now I have to know what the world's largest round barn.
I think there's one larger in Scandinavia.
Okay, you got to go a long way to see the largest round barn.
Round barns aren't much of a thing, I guess.
No, not like a covered bridge. If you don't have a covered bridge, we're not really.
That's in Iowa.
Yeah.
No. You have a covered bridge leading to your round barn.
Exactly.
Then
exactly
you're
right.
Tourist heaven.
So, yeah, I grew up in Marshfield, Wisconsin, and then Summer and I met in Madison, Wisconsin. I went to undergrad there, and Summer was in grad school for acting there. And then we went to Liverpool for a year. We were in Texas for a couple of years. Then we moved here in 2006. Because I got into grad school at DePaul, and we've been in Chicago ever since, making theater and
staying busy,
stuff. Yeah,
not having a day off for 9 months. I love that.
Exactly right.
And Diana, who is a pharmacist by trade and venturing off into theater, mm-hmm. Where are you from originally?
Northwest suburbs.
We know where those are. Which tell us which one.
I'm from Wheeling.
You're from Wheeling. Mm-hmm. Okay. And
general that way direction.
So first, did you go into pharmacy because that was what your family expected, or you thought that was a... Were you drawn to it?
Well, I was the kid who, when you asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I never had an answer. Mm-hmm. And it was just one of those things where it was Spanish class, and my Spanish partner was like, hey, I'm going to go into pharmacy school. I was like, great. I'll do it too. So,
wow.
Like from high school, I worked in pharmacy.
I'm so glad I didn't say like clown school, which I was not to say there's anything wrong with clown school. I mean, you can go to Baraboo, Wisconsin, you'd be all set. But so because your classmate said pharmacy.
Yeah, so like that was when I was 16. So that's when I started working in pharmacies. I was a technician. And
wait, you were 16 and you're like, I'm going to start now.
Well, no, I mean, I started working. I wanted a job too. So I figured I'd get my foot in that door. So,
and you were a pharmacy technician.
Yeah, and then I went through school.
You were listening pretty late. And I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are in the Showcase Studio.
Hold on one second.
Showcase Studio. And joining me is...
I'm apparently having another interview during this interview.
Hold on a second. Do you want me to roll this down? Let me roll down production. 1 second. We have... I recorded an interview that's going to air after this interview. Then that got weird. Everyone else heard me, right?
It's with Cody.
Yeah.
It's with Cody.
Okay, so when you were working as a pharmacy technician, I mean, did you enjoy being behind the counter with the pharmacists?
At first, yeah, when I didn't have the ultimate responsibility, sure.
Yeah, I would think that's a lot of pressure.
It was a great time, it was great people that I worked with, but everything, my life was on a very specific track from a kind of a young age.
Right.
Like I describe it as I had, you know, the whole Tiger Mom thing from way back when that came out? I sort of had Tiger Mom light. Mm-hmm. So, like, I did the piano thing from when I was really, really little. I was in the music. Everything was all about school, and I had to go... There was a certain trajectory my life was supposed to take.
And so the family must have been happy if you were doing pharmacy.
Yeah.
Because that's respectful, mm-hmm. and respectable.
Yeah.
And it's professional. It's in the medical industry.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I've heard that pharmacy school is a little rough.
It can be, yeah. So, it was that whole thing where I could be anything I wanted to be so long as I was a doctor or an engineer.
Or a doctor or an engineer.
Yeah.
Yeah. did you have an aha moment of, were you at a theater? Were you watching a movie? What made...
We grew up watching a lot of theater and, you know, the TV movies of the musicals. Like, Sound of Music is the first movie I remember watching.
Mm-hmm.
It was before I knew what the actual story was. I just liked the songs.
Sure.
So that's what I sang along with. And it's something that's always been a part of my life, but anytime I actually wanted to try to step into it, it wasn't really encouraged.
Because it's not practical.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I went to school, I did the thing, and I decided that I was going to do this for a certain number of years, and then otherwise I was going to lose my mind. And I was getting to that point, so I stepped away and stopped caring what everybody thought and tried it.
And here you are.
So far, it's going all right, I think.
In your first, yeah, sounds like it. In your first production of Chagrin Falls, that's what your debut is. Very exciting. I almost wish I'd been. I mean, I do wish that I'd been there.
I was there. I saw the understudy performance. It was really wonderful. And the watching an understudy performance as a member of the actual cast is very strange.
Is it?
Because there's all, we have a couple of people who are in the regular cast playing different roles, so we have the right people in the wrong roles. Mm-hmm. And then we have all these strange people who are playing the roles, and everything going off the same.
Right.
And all the things that happen that are your little cues to get ready are happening, but you don't get to get ready because somebody else is doing the show. And it's like, what was it, the Seinfeld finale where they're making the show? Where Jerry and George are going to make the show of Seinfeld.
Right.
And so they have all the different people. It was very much like watching all the different people. Awesome. It was that very, very strange. But it was
kind of meta.
And wonderful. And yeah. Wonderful to watch because
we got to
experience the show.
A lot of tea.
Yes.
And John Paul, where are you from?
Actually, I'm from, I spent half of my week in the suburbs of Chicago, and then I spent the other half in Chicago growing up.
So, why was that? Just the family situation?
Yeah, I mean, my parents were divorced. So, yeah.
And they were shuttling you back. In which suburb were you split between Chicago?
Lake Forest, Illinois.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to use that voice.
I like to say we lived on the wrong side of the tracks, if there is a wrong side.
I know the feeling far as that goes. So theater to your family, is that something that they encouraged?
Nope.
Nope. It's like, nope, not at all. Yeah. They still don't know. Shh, don't tell anybody.
No, surprise. I just sort of, at some point, I just decided that this is what I wanted to do. Music was a huge part of my life. I also play bass in a punk rock band, which is a double middle finger.
To the family.
Yes. To my parents.
I like me now, mom and dad.
I love them to death, but they're still confused.
They'll get over it.
Yeah.
Or not.
Yeah, right?
It's tough.
I'll be around a little longer than they will. Anyway, so,
One assumes.
Could you make sure that goes on their Christmas card? I'm going to be around
I'll be around
longer.
I'll be you will.
Happy holidays, mom and dad. I think that's a great sentiment. Merrick, where are you from?
Like Summer, I'm from Iowa. I grew up in Marion, Iowa, a suburb of Cedar Rapids. I was named after the Elephant Man, John Merrick, because my father played him in a community theater production in the mid-80s.
Ah, so theater in your family.
Yeah, so I was slightly encouraged to pursue this this vocation. In fact, my mother discouraged me from being a teacher because they were both teachers, and they knew that that's not what I really wanted to do. So they definitely encouraged me. Shout out to my mother listening right now in Marion, Iowa.
Hi, Mom. What's your mom's name?
Lois.
Hey, Lois.
Hi, Lois.
Thank you for tuning in.
Love you. So I had wonderful parents who were always pushing me to follow my dreams and all that kind of stuff, and that means I don't have any money right now.
Mom, hey, Lois. Hint.
Coming home for Christmas.
Oh, that's cool.
With laundry.
You're right. And I just wanted to say, since coming to Chicago, I had the opportunity to study with Summer and Andrew at the Green Shirt Studio that they run, which is a primarily Meisner-based studio. It was my first chance to really delve into a craft, in the actor's craft, and they've also built a great community in that space. And this show in particular, you know, there's a lot of, it's very heavy. It could be done the wrong way,
sure.
Emotionally. And because of what Andrew and Summer have built, their community and the safety that they put into the work that they do, this show was done the right way. And the way they teach acting is done the right way. And if you're looking for a place to find that in Chicago, check out the Green Shirt Studio.
Green Shirt Studio. And how can people get information about the Green Shirt Studio?
GreenShirtStudio.com.
GreenShirtStudio.com. And last but not least, we have Rob.
Oh.
Rob Kuhn.
Well,
where are you from originally?
This is an involved question because, I mean, I originally came into the world in South Texas.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm from a military family.
Ah.
So
which part of South Texas is a huge, there's like a whole.
The Rio Grande Valley. I was from a town called Harlingen, which is about 12 miles north of the border, north of the river.
And what's the border town there? What's the Mexican? border towns?
Well, Matamoros is the big one.
Yeah, that's
But there's Matamoros, there's, you know, Progreso, there's...
Matamoros is the one that people know, because that's supposed to be kind of a scary...
Yeah.
It's not far from Padre Island, then.
Yeah, very close to Padre Island. Very close to South Padre Island. My father was in the Air Force, so we moved around a lot. I grew up mainly in Central California because, you know, my mother and my father went different directions.
So you had a bigger hike than John Paul did.
And it was a hike because, you know, he would be stationed, say, in Texas or in Georgia, and I'd go stay there in the summertime and the school year I'd be in California. But mostly grew up in California, met my wife in California. And after we were married, she went to the University of Connecticut. So our first couple of years of marriage were in beautiful Storrs, Connecticut.
That had to be a bit of a change, cultural change for you.
It was a cultural change, and it was meteorological change.
Yes, and then cold. Well. You're like, oh, this stuff's happening.
And then after she graduated, we moved to Chicago, and that was in the summer of 1983, because I am the old man of the group.
But hardworking. Got a lot going on, writing plays and acting.
You talk about hard working. I think about people who dig ditches and do iron work outside in 10-degree weather.
I agree.
But there is something that's challenging about this work, and you have to have diligence and apply a certain rigor
and perseverance.
And absolutely perseverance.
You have to have a lot of confidence. And what got you into theater? Before we go, I just want to find out.
Well, I come from my father's family. They're artists. They're musicians and painters and writers and teachers. And they are also, I also come from a long line of Lutheran pastors.
Okay.
And
they have great coffee and potluck dinners.
a lot of pot roast, a lot of donut holes.
That's right.
And bad coffee. Mm-hmm. I was attending California Lutheran University. I was pre-seminary, and there was a church theater program.
Ah.
And there was something about actually trying to figure out what was going on, having the questions that was empowering at a time and a place
where the
academic thrust was to what are the answers instead of what are the questions.
Yeah.
And so I wound up moving from seminary, pre-seminary to theater. And you know, theater began as religion.
Right.
Theater began as really about inquiries about what it means to be a human being and what it means to have relationships with other people.
And to tell stories.
And to tell stories. And the stories that give meaning to the experiences that we have in life.
Right.
So they've always been very, very close with me. And you know, right now my day job is right up the street at Fourth Presbyterian Church. I run the visual arts program there.
Oh, there you go. So staying in it.
Yeah. So it's still very, very, very close.
Well, I want to thank all of our guests for sharing some of their journey, and I look forward to having you all back. I look forward to the future productions. Where can people find out more about what's going on with the agency?
Sure. You can find out more about us at weareTheAgency.org.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Everyone have a great night. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Patty. It's wonderful to be here.
I love you, Mom and Dad. Aww. I really do.
Yeah, anybody else want to do a shout out before? I don't want anyone to be left out.
Thanks, Mom and Dad.
We do have an interview coming up with Jennifer from Chopin Coffee. You are listening pretty late, and I'm your host, Patty Vasquez. We are in the Showcase Studio, the Allstate Showcase Studio, and joining me is Jennifer from Chopin Coffee, who we met last summer. Thank you so much for coming back, Jennifer.
Thanks for having me, Patty.
I have developed a little bit of an addiction to French press coffee. Thank you for that. It's hard for me to drink it any other way. Now, what is the difference between sort of the coffee maker, you know, style that we're used to, as opposed to going through the French press?
Yeah, so there are a couple of differences. Coffee makers we're used to are pretty much like the coffee is in a filter and you drip water through it. So the water's touching the coffee for a short amount of time before it goes into the pot.
Right.
Whereas with the French press, you're combining the water and the coffee grounds together and kind of letting it brew together in there. So you conserve a little bit more of the flavor. It maybe tastes a little fuller. And then you also get more of the oils from the coffee bean.
Because
those don't really drip through the filter. But with the French press, they're in there. So.
It is. It's a richer taste. It really is. Yeah. And people are intimidated. I was intimidated by, you know, the idea of using this glass carafe and, you know, making sure I had the right amount of water to coffee grounds. But you really, it's a little bit of trial and error, but it's not that bad. I'm a complete idiot and I'm able to do it.
I don't think you are, but I think, you know, it's pretty foolproof. But like you said, just takes a little experimentation. But that's the fun part. part, you develop exactly how you like your coffee. And then when you switch to a different coffee bean, it might be a totally different story. So you get to experiment once again.
Well, and especially, you know, during the holidays, people are looking for gifts to buy for their friends and family. And this is kind of something fun to go, here, try something new. Although, obviously, you know, you can buy the Chopin coffee, bags and bags of coffee and brew it the same way you usually do. But why not try something new for 2017?
Absolutely. New year, new you.
New year, new you. Look at that. And you have brought me a gift. Thank you so much for this. Now, this is the name of this coffee is A Better Life. And this is with you guys have a relationship with our friends at ChildServe, don't you?
We do. Yes. It's our newest partnership. We're so excited about it. And it was born right here on your show last June, which is amazing.
With Senator Dan Katowski.
Exactly. Senator Dan Katowski and I met on your show and just got to talking, I think, during one of the breaks about, you know, I had talked about Chopin, but he told me about ChildServe and what he does there. And we were like, whoa, these two organizations have such similar missions, which is to empower children.
Right.
And really believing that every child deserves, you know, to grow to their full potential. So whereas with Chopin Coffee, we're focused on children in Guatemala, ChildServe is focused on kids right here in Chicago.
Right.
So that radio show in June led to, you know, some more discussions, and we decided to create three special coffee blends together with ChildServe that would benefit not only kids in Guatemala, but also kids right here in Chicago.
Well, and that's the thing. It's always nice when you can buy something and feel good about it, knowing mm-hmm. that, well, one, this is a company that's here in Chicago, and the coffee beans do come from Guatemala.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is your husband is originally from the town where the coffee bean farms are?
So my husband's family is from Guatemala, and mm-hmm. his grandfather actually had a coffee farm there.
Right.
We don't source from that farm. It's a little bit low-lying. We go really high up into high altitude. So we work with two different co-ops in Guatemala.
Okay.
So it's groupings. Co-ops are groupings of smaller farmers. So we love that because we're supporting the small farmers. It's fair trade and organic, the coffee from Guatemala. Then we do source some beans from other regions of the world as well. So we really source from all over. And then all of the bags of coffee result in meals being served to kids in Guatemala. So like you said, you buy something that you'd be buying anyways, which is coffee, but you get to feel really good about the fact that you're making a difference in the world.
And it's such good coffee. Now, one of the bags that you have for A Better Life with ChildServe, you said this has a flavor.
Yeah.
Can you tell me, how do you do flavor on coffee beans?
Well,
what's the process? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah. So the beans are roasted, and then the flavoring is added like during the roasting process. And this particular one, we're really excited because it's our first flavored coffee bean.
That's what I was wondering, because right, because I go through and your descriptions of what the coffee is going to taste like are really tremendous. It's pretty spot on, because you'll read a bottle of wine mm-hmm. or another coffee bag and it's not quite what you expect, you know. And really, these have been accurate every time I've opened a bag of Chopin.
Well, that's great to hear. And you've opened a lot of bags of Chopin, and we really appreciate that.
A lot of bags. Because I do buy mine. I asked you before the show if it's okay that I'm ordering them on Amazon, because I'm doing other shopping. I'm like, oh, I need more Chopin.
Yes, absolutely. We're on Amazon. We've got a number of different roasts there. And then you can also, you can buy all of our roasts on the website, which is just chopincoffee.com.
And then with we were saying, I kind of interrupted, we were saying this is your first flavor mm-hmm. coffee bean. How was it kind of, was it a little intimidating to go, we're branching off, but it really is something that people look for too, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. We've gotten the question, and then actually it's very personal to ChildServe, because one of the staff members there who has been working a lot with us on this collaboration, she just loves hazelnut flavored coffee.
Really?
So she said, do you have a hazelnut? I said, well, we can make one. And so, you know,
that's going to make her feel cool that she asked the question. And next thing you know, a coffee company makes a flavor for her.
Yes. So the A Better Life roast is a hazelnut coffee. And April at ChildServe is very happy about that.
Congratulations, April.
Yes.
And to everybody else who likes hazelnut. And again, we are talking to Jennifer from Chopin Coffee. You can go to the website mm-hmm. to order. You can get a holiday. There's still time to order it as a gift. You can do a monthly subscription for someone.
Yeah.
Would that be like different flavors?
So the monthly subscriptions, they're right there on the gift section of the website. We've got, it's pretty cool. We've got a 3-month subscription or a 6-month. So
okay.
You can give, let's say you want to introduce mom to Chapin Coffee or brothers or sisters. It's a really nice gift. Then they continue to think about you a couple months after Christmas, you know, right, after the holidays. So the first bag that comes in the subscription is our signature Luz de Vida roast from Guatemala that comes wrapped in a beautiful handmade Mayan fabric bag. I think I brought you one the first time I met you. Yeah, yeah. So that's the very first roast. So
by the way, I use that bag for my sunglass cases.
Like, oh, perfect.
I have a collection of sunglasses for the, you know, and more so like the, for the beach and things like that.
Yeah.
And I put them all in my little Mayan bag from Chapin.
I love that. That's the first time I've heard sunglasses carrier.
Yes.
But people use it for all different things. It's a reusable bag for sure.
For the gift packages,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, for the gift subscriptions, the very first one they get is this beautiful woven bag with delicious, beautiful coffee inside. And then for the next, you know, however many months, whether it's the 3 month or the 6 month, they get whatever is our roast of the month. You can choose, you know, to give them whole bean coffee or pre-ground coffee, depending on what they have at home. We also have K-cups, and so there's a K-cup gift box that you can give them as well that comes with two different flavors.
And that's the individual serving that a lot of people like.
Yeah, that's the single-serve pods. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
We are talking to Jennifer from Chapin Coffee, and we're going to find out more information about the company. But first, before we go to the break, let me know what's the website where people can order?
Yeah, it's www.chapincoffee.com.
So chapincoffee.com, that's CHAPIN.com. You don't have to put the accent on the I.
That's... You do not need the accent, but you do need Chapin and coffee together.
Chapincoffee.com. Mm-hmm. Chapincoffee.com. More with Jennifer in just a few minutes. I'm gonna open this bag and just start smelling some of the wonderful coffee beans that you brought for me. More in just a moment on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Thank you so much for listening, Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And joining me is Jennifer from Chapin Coffee, who I'm so excited about the partnership you've developed with Senator Dan Katowski, who works for ChildServe and all the great kids. By the way, I didn't see you at the gala. I know that you were there that night.
I was there, and you were amazing.
Oh, you're very sweet.
Amazing MC.
It was very fun. I just like, you know, give me a microphone, and I just want everyone to have a good time. It was a really lovely event.
Oh, yeah, we did. And part of the reason I think we didn't see each other is there were so many people
there. It was so crowded.
It was packed, and everyone was having a great time, and it was just... You know, they shared stories, as you know, they shared stories from actual beneficiaries of ChildServe. And it was profound to see the work and to see the results of this work.
And it was inspiring, too. I know that, you know, in the sort of, I guess, the environment that we're all in now, regardless of how people feel politically, I think that there is a new call to taking care of each other. And this is such a wonderful way for people. Look, you're having a cup of coffee anyway. You know, order a bag of Chapin coffee. You can go to chapincoffee.com. You can help kids here in the Chicagoland area lead happier and healthier lives, as well as children in Guatemala. If you have a different bag of coffee that you're ordering, you provide meals to the kids in the communities where the coffee is grown.
Yep, that's exactly right. And with this ChildServe partnership that we have, every bag of the ChildServe coffee in the collection. So there's the hazelnut that we talked about.
Right.
Delicious hazelnut, A Better Life.
That's right. There's other ones, aren't there?
Yeah. We have another one called A Better Morning.
Oh.
And that is a Guatemalan bean, fair trade and organic. It's delicious and beautiful. And then we also have a decaf called A Better Day Decaf.
Oh, I should always make sure I ask about the decaf.
We do not exclude any decaf lovers here. We've got all of it. So those are the three coffees in the ChildServe collection that we just developed along with Dan and his team. And for every bag in that collection, one meal is delivered to a child in Guatemala, and 10% of the proceeds go back to ChildServe.
Okay.
So then that is supporting kids here at home who are, you know, at-risk children and families with the wonderful programming that ChildServe has that helps those kids grow to their full potential.
It's such a great idea. And I'm wondering, where did the sort of... the origin of your drive to not only create a successful business, but also coordinate that with communities who are in need? Because that's not something everybody really strives to do. You know, there are, believe me, I'm aware that there are people who work very hard in that direction. But usually people want to, you know, run at a profit, or they run nonprofits. How did you find a way to bridge those two?
Yeah, well, that genius really comes from my partner and who is now my husband as well, on our second date, like almost 7 years ago now, it's hard to believe. Yeah, we were, you know, second date talk, right? We're talking about our dreams. And he said that his dream was to start a coffee company that would feed kids in his parents' home country of Guatemala. And I just felt chills, and I'd actually visited Guatemala before I met him.
Really?
I felt very connected to the country in an inexplicable way. I felt this connection. I felt like the place was going to be important in my life, but it made no sense. That was 3 years before I met him. It made no sense at the time.
Okay, now I'm getting chills.
Well, here's the last kicker for you. My grandparents actually lived in Guatemala for some time, about 45 years ago. My grandfather...
What?
Yeah, he retired after being in World War II and then starting a business of his own when he got back. He retired and became a volunteer in Latin America, and he went down and would mentor startup businesses and entrepreneurs there. So he was working in Guatemala City with a young entrepreneur that had a moving and storage company, which is now, you know, almost 50 years later, one of the largest companies in Guatemala.
That is tremendous.
Yeah, so the Guatemalan thread runs deep. And when I heard this idea from my husband, or, you know, at that point, my date.
Your second date.
My second date. I was like, I think I put my hands on the table and leaned in and said, like, you have to do that. And he didn't run away from that passion. And, you know, as our relationship deepened and continued, I went from being like a cheerleader to getting more and more involved. And over the years, it came to be an actual company. So, you know, it's really this seed that was born in his childhood of spending summers on a coffee farm. Every summer they'd go back and visit family, and he'd just run around and play on the coffee farm with, you know, with the kids that live in the community.
Right.
These kids, kids like them that we're now helping, were his friends. And as he got older, he started to realize they had a really different life from what he was living when he came back here to the U.S. And he wanted to understand why. And it's really because of the poverty and the malnutrition. And so he knew, you know, I have to do something about this someday.
See, and again, people often hear that voice but don't know how to act on it. So mm-hmm. It sounds like you two have made this wonderful team. Who else did you bring into the sort of that building part of it?
Yeah.
Was there other family members, or he had business partners?
So we've bootstrapped everything, you know, really with the two of us. But when you say other family members, yes, right. Absolutely. His family in Guatemala has helped out quite a bit
right.
along the way. And we're so grateful. You know, his mom was a huge inspiration for all of this, because she's really the person who instilled in him this value for other human beings, and, you know, making sure that we always do what we can for each other.
Right.
So that was a seed planted in, you know, early on. Now we have a lovely, another young woman working with us who is also from Guatemala. She moved here about a year ago and contacted us because she saw a story about Chapin.
Okay.
While she was doing some research online, and it struck me when she just emailed out of the blue. So we started talking, and now on our second date, if you will, my time that I met her for coffee, we were talking about, you know, our personal lives, and she had just gotten married, and talking about Guatemala. And it turns out that the farm where she got married in Guatemala, I had actually visited with my husband.
Really?
Because that farm belongs to his cousin, who is also her cousin.
Ah,
so
what a small world.
Family.
Really?
Yeah.
That's wow. That is so wild.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I feel like it feels as though you're so open. You and your husband and Chapin Coffee are so open to building these relationships. Mm-hmm. And it takes that initiative of, you know, someone reaching out to you or just having a conversation. Sometimes it is being in the right place at the right time.
For sure. For sure.
Because what did you want to do? What was your plan when you were in college or growing up?
Oh, man. I think I had a lot of different plans. Yeah. I've always been a kind of eclectic person. I grew up in a family of artists. So my dad directed musical theater. My mom performed and did musical direction. And I started doing that from the time I was like 4 years old. It was my first stage play.
Oh.
Did that all through.
What was the play?
Sound of Music.
Sound of Music?
Yes, I was the youngest.
Oh, so I can see that.
Yeah, I was a tiny little tot out
adorable.
There on the stage. But I had begged my dad to audition because I had been watching, you know, shows for years at that point, and
right.
I wanted to be up there. And
sure.
I had to talk to him into it for at least a year, I think. I was working on him. Finally, he said, okay, I'm doing a show and you can audition. But you have to audition. You have to do a good job. Otherwise, you're not going to get the part.
Right. No nepotism here.
No. Mm-mm. The opposite. So I had really had a lot of artistic, you know, experience prior to college. And then I kind of rebelled and studied economics.
Oh, wow.
In undergrad. I know, right? Because I had that interest too.
Were they doing Guns and Butter when you were doing economics?
They were, and the island that would produce bananas and then the other island that wouldn't produce bananas.
Oh, is that what they're...
Yeah, but I do remember the guns and butter example as well.
It's so strange.
Yeah.
Supply and demand. When Greenspan said that he didn't know what happened to the economy, I'm like, good. Because here's an economist who has absolutely no idea what happened. I got a D in economics. At least I didn't break the economy.
You also have a degree?
No. Oh. I got a D in economics. Oh, I had one class. And I was like, because they combined macro and micro.
Oh.
So, exactly. Thank you.
I would have gotten a D in that as well.
Yeah, they had it. Well, after that year, they separated it out into two different courses.
Yeah.
But they jammed it all into one semester at the University of Illinois. I love you, U of I, but that was a bad year
for cruel.
Me.
That's cruel.
It was a bad semester. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So you were studying economics.
Yeah.
And does that inform the sort of business approach that you have? It must.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That really gave me, that was the beginning of my experience in business, really. And I went on to work in finance after college. Kind of a little bit by accident, but I had this tremendous job here in Chicago working with an alternative investment company, and I got to dig into, I was an analyst, so I got to dig into companies and understand how they worked
right.
and how the funds flowed and whether they would be successful or not, which was a great education. Then I went back and got my MBA as a way to really broaden out and study operations, marketing, and all that stuff. And my husband, he was getting his MBA at the same school at the same time. We didn't know each other there, but that connection brought us together 3 years later through mutual friends.
Oh, see, that all worked out.
It all worked out. So it's like you say, you have to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And there's been just so much of that with Chapin, from meeting Senator Dan Katowski on your show to, meeting up with this long lost cousin and having her make a tremendous impact on our company. And there have been so many things. And I've done a lot throughout my career. It makes me sound like I'm 60, but
no. But what you are doing and what you have accomplished is it's not just being in the right place at the right time, but being prepared for that moment and what to do next. Right? You could have had a conversation with Senator Katowski or this woman who emailed you, and so just moved on. But instead, you knew to both you and the senator knew to like there's something here. Let's work on it. Other people don't follow through. They talk the talk, but you walk the walk. You're a businesswoman with heart, and that's really impressive. And we're so honored to have you as a regular guest on the show.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I would say, Senator Dan Katowski, he models that. And so this is only possible because of his vision as well. And he really came to, me with this vision. And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. And so together, it was able to come to fruition in a pretty short amount of time.
I like thinking of pretty late as being a business hookup.
Absolutely.
And also, philanthropy, too. It's really amazing. Again, we've been hanging out with Jennifer from Chapin Coffee. Go to chapincoffee.com for, your holiday shopping. This is, you may not get the package of coffee delivered in time, but you can send out a letter saying, this is what I've subscribed you for, right? You're going to be receiving this every month, 3 months or 6 month subscriptions.
Yeah.
And it's a really great way. Don't be afraid of the French press.
No.
It's the best way to drink coffee.
Patty's a convert to the French
press. I am. I take pictures of my French press coffee.
Yes, we love that.
Thank you. I will. You know what? I will post one on Christmas Eve. Actually, for our Christmas breakfast, we do this egg casserole, and I'll make sure we've got the French press coffee out with Chapin Coffee with my Better Life, the hazelnut flavor.
Yeah. I mean, what better way to, ring in the new year with the Better Life collection.
And Wide Awake.
Yes.
With all the caffeine. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas.
Thank you, Patty. Happy holidays to you.
And we will see you soon in the new year.
Yes.
Yay. More after this on 720 WGN. You're live, Merrick. That's you. Go ahead.
Tell me that you love me.
Take it.
Take it where?
Take it all. Take it home.
Take it home.
You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. I did not allow our friends, our cast and director and artistic director of Chagrin Falls to leave. I locked the doors. I said, don't go anywhere.
You can't escape.
No, you're not allowed. Because during our conversation, not only did we learn that Summer was a failed mime.
The only thing she's ever failed.
Which actually sounds like it's kind of a wonderful thing. I mean, A successful mime
she's
is
so
actually sadder.
She's so good at talking now.
She's such a talker, all with the talking. But we also found out that Merrick, amongst the cast, they were encouraging you to sing the pep talk.
That's right.
And is there anything? So this is a song that you wrote. Is this for the play itself, or is this something you've come up with over the years?
Over this year specifically, during the run of the play, I was inspired to become a songwriter of sorts.
Oh, so
this is literally the first song I've ever written.
Oh.
Yeah. And there was a song after this, but we don't have to go into that.
And it's not,
There's a B-side.
That's right. To your single.
It's much more heartfelt.
What inspired the song that you've written?
I kind of woke up with this melody in my head, and I was thinking about it on the bus ride to the show, and then of course John Paul is always helping me with my lyrics in the two songs that I've written, and he was as part of this process as I ever was.
Now,
so.
Do you mind if I go Facebook Live with this, because it seems
I mean why not? If we're gonna launch a career, why don't we do it right?
Now, have you done this song a cappella before, or is this the first time?
I have not done this a cappella. You can imagine a bright and lovely piano accompaniment behind it.
Oh, wait, I see. Someone just fingers tinkling on the ivories.
Ding, ding, ding.
Merrick, is it Merrick with two R's, I-C-K? Is that the...
That's right. Okay. M-E-R-R-I-C-K, just like the Elephant Man.
Debuts his song, Pep Talk.
Pep Talk.
All right.
That's right.
And again, is this something that you've done for the cast? Was this before, like this during, during warm-ups a little bit?
Yeah, the Den Theater had a little piano in there, and I've played it twice in the Den lobby area.
Oh.
Even asked permission from the bartender, so.
All right. So this is your world premiere outside of the theater.
That's right.
This is the first time you've had the opportunity to perform it.
World premiere.
On the radio. Yeah. And your mom's listening, too, by the way. No pressure.
She is. I told her to stay on for this. So.
All right. So... On WGN Radio, for the very first time, here's our friend Merrick from Chagrin Falls, well, actually from Iowa, near Cedar Rapids.
That's right.
And here is Merrick with Pep Talk.
All right. Hi, everyone. I have a little message for you. It's gonna be cool. It's gonna be awesome. It's gonna be sweet. It's not gonna suck. Just stick it out. It'll just make you stronger. It's gonna be swell. All you need is some luck and a pep talk, 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 a pep talk. Follow your dreams, think out of the box, and be your best self. Shoot for the stars. If you follow through, you'll be your own king. Comfort zones will be crushed. You could end up on Mars with a pep talk, 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 a pep talk. Time for the bridge. If you think hard enough, believe strong enough, nothing can stand in your way. And when people face things that kill half the human race, like zombies and A-bombs and Zika and bird flu, think of the words that'll carry you through. You'll never die like the folks who did and listened to. And then there's a piano. A pep talk, 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 everybody! A pep talk, 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 dink!
That was
there. It is
spectacular.
I'd like to thank my backup band. It's quite beautiful.
You did not see that happening when you were heading into WGN.
Not at
Radio.
All. No.
That I think we all needed a pep talk. I feel
I think
so much
everyone
better.
Does at this moment. You know.
I think that you know what, the Cubs might have won the World Series, but they wouldn't have gone into extra innings had you given them that talk in the dugout. I think we wouldn't have needed the rain delay.
That's right.
Everything would have been good.
Who needs a meeting in the dugout when you got a pep talk?
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, Merrick, that was wonderful. So that now, how often did he do this before?
Incessantly.
And here's the thing. Our listeners are going to have that stuck in their heads.
You're welcome.
Especially the ones that were just about to drift off to sleep.
That's
the ones
right.
The ones that, you know, like that moment right before you fall asleep where your body kind of twitches, right? Like they twitched to you singing pep talk. And now they're like awake because they've been pepped.
They can they can count the peps as they fall asleep.
All the peps. Or they can get up and change their lives.
That's
you don't
right.
know.
Maybe now's there's, the time.
Now's the time.
Seize they're, the day.
Seize or the 2 a.m.
Yes.
Whatever it takes.
Start of the day.
Oh, Merrick, I love it. Esmeralda, do you feel more pepped?
I feel super pepped.
She feels all the pep. Jasmine and her boyfriend were in the booth. They were dancing. They were all into it. I do love that you let us know where the piano bridge was.
That's right.
That was very charming.
You know,
you gotta
visualize it.
Yeah, no, you have to actually. No, we need to know where that's happening.
Absolutely.
Oh man. Now, Merrick, what are you off to next? What's
I'm actually doing a play of Macbeth by Shakespeare.
Ooh, well, that guy.
The Scottish.
I've
play.
Heard of him.
Yes. Most people have.
You're not
like.
In a theater. You can say it.
That's right.
Say
that's
it three
why
times,
it.
And then Candyman shows up. It's the weirdest.
I'm not
thing.
Running around this building three times. So.
Where are you doing Macbeth?
Doing it at the Filament Space as part of the Shakespeare All-Stars ensemble.
The Shakespeare All-Stars.
That's right. Yeah.
It's not the Shakespeare Slouches.
No. We're the All-Stars.
We're the All-Stars.
For sure.
Well, when does that start?
Opens February 17th, I believe, at the Filament Theater Space in Chicago.
Well, I look forward to all of our performers that were in studio with us. Let us know what's coming up in your future. We are hanging out with our friends from the cast of Chagrin Falls, the Agency Theater Collective. And you can go to their website. Do you know their website?
The Agency Theater. We are the agency.org.
We are the agency.org. Quick break here and more after this on 720 WGN. Vic Vaughn, did you have a chance to hear the pep talk?
Zika, bird flu, and A-bomb was my favorite part.
You know what? Now I feel like I will survive just about anything, don't you?
I do too. We were dancing up here too.